Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a space for those who are healing from complex and developmental trauma. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach, survivor, and thriver. The intent of the podcast is to provide helpful information with insight that can validate, encourage, and support you on your healing journey. You're going to hear stories from other survivors and trauma experts, featuring therapists, coaches, and practitioners. We will open up the conversation on effective trauma healing modalities, practices, and tools. If you are interested in trauma recovery coaching, as well as recommended books and healing resources, head over to www.thehealingtraumapodcast.com. And now, here is your host, Monique Coven.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm so glad you're here. On today's episode, I am inviting you into a conversation I had with my friend, Ali Capurro. Ali is a somatic trauma therapist, and she's also a survivor of complex trauma. And so I thought that we could talk about healing from trauma in general, as survivors ourselves on the healing journey, and as people who are supporting other survivors on their journey of healing. I hope that you find today's episode helpful. Stay tuned to the end of the episode where I share a small reflection of my conversation with Ali. Welcome, Ali.
Hi, Monique. So good to be here.
So good to have you. So I just want to say this episode that we're doing it's not exactly your typical episode where I'm interviewing a guest. And this is really going to be more of a conversation between two friends who also happen to be helping professionals. You're a trauma therapist and coach. I'm a trauma coach, and we both have histories of complex trauma.
Yes.
Right. So I thought, and you thought, that how great would it be for us to just get real and to talk about healing and what it feels like it really is like. And just see what comes up. We didn't plan anything, but we just thought this would be helpful for the listeners to just get real.
Oh, that feels so good. And to acknowledge that immediately, I just thought of one of my therapists. And notice one of my therapists over time. But we did primarily EMDR work together. And I remember communicating a frustration about something in my life and kind of feeling like I wasn't healing like I wanted to be healing. And she said, this is what healing from trauma looks like. It's not going from bad to good. It's messy and it's complicated, and it involves setbacks. And that was, as you were sharing the opening right there, that's what I was thinking of. And I'm so glad to have this discussion with you about kind of that exact topic. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I think that I named the podcast, the podcast is called the Healing Trauma Podcast. And I think after we've recognized that, okay, this all makes sense. This is what it is. This is why we have all of these symptoms and the experiences of feeling like we're still back there. We want to heal.
Yeah. Gosh,
heal now. And there often is a feeling of urgency that comes with it. Like I gotta heal now. And I know this is familiar. It was for me, and it is with my clients. I don't know if you find the same thing too, that
you know, they're reading six books at one time on trauma recovery. They're listening to every podcast episode, going for help, you know, trying to heal and thinking that if I can just do this fast, that then I'll be healed. And yes. I won't have to experience all of these symptoms yes. and live yes. a normal, quote unquote, normal life.
Yes, that's so true. And it's like, as you say that, a real tenderness opens up in me because I can really relate to that. You know, the feeling of it's been so hard for so long.
Oh.
I just want it to get good.
Oh, yes,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so that urgency, it makes so much sense. And another thing that my EMDR therapist reminded me consistently of is we want you to heal and have a life. Like, I want you to, when you come in here and do your work and read your books, whatever, it's fair to spend a certain amount of time healing and live your life. Enjoy all those moments that were, sometimes it'll be something fun that I'm supposed to be doing, but I'm thinking about, I should be reading, or I should be listening to the podcast, Monique's podcast.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's so true, because it becomes our number one priority is to get better, not to feel this, you know? And we were talking about this a bit, but I think that sometimes there's a lot of misconceptions about healing that you see in different places and you hear from different, you know, people that you can be, that trauma can be, I don't know, abolished, resolved completely. I don't know. Do you find the same thing, that you hear those things?
Yeah, and I'm thinking of some of the things that we talked about in the pre-call. Just when things get packaged and sold, I remember, I don't want to misquote, but I remember hearing or reading something that Peter Levine, the developer of somatic experiencing, said. He said something like, if someone claims to teach you or to heal you from trauma in a weekend, I would be skeptical. And I appreciated that because I've been studying trauma for so many years, and some days it feels like I know less than when I started, only because I know of the vast information available out there. But yeah, I think the complexity of it is so nuanced and so I can't think of the word I want here, but it's so unique maybe to each individual. So there's these things that help and that work, but it's really the individuals. I like to think of it almost like a hero's journey, like it's our own hero's journey or heroine's journey. Because it's so different for each individual.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, I mean, in the title itself, complex trauma, we're talking about so many things here, right? When we talk about complex trauma, we're talking about like developmental trauma, so attachment issues, you know, early, and these hardwired patterns that the body learns very young. I don't know if it was Pat Ogden that said it on the podcast, but those patterns, they're hard. They're hard to change. They can change, but it's hard,
right?
Because they're so hardwired in there and they're reflexive, right? And then there's like, you know, so complex, the patterns, the sensations that we feel, how it shows up in our relationships, those deep beliefs that sometimes we don't even know they're there, but they are impacting how we are show up in the world, and you know, and
exactly.
our thoughts, and the intergenerational stuff, and so it's complex. And so sometimes it's like, you know, you're working on one thing and you might be working on something else, and so to expect that it can be resolved or abolished after you know, going for therapy completely, I think that that's just, I wish it was so, but I don't think that's really realistic.
Right. I in my own healing, what I've noticed is kind of what I would describe as a spiral in the sense of coming back around to things that I thought I had healed from, but at a deeper level of understanding or a deeper level of healing. And so just speaking to the ongoing nature of this and the complexity that I'll come across these things. That I did this already. Mm. I already healed, to be just general, the relationship with my mom. And then it comes back around in a different way.
Yes.
But something that you said, Monique, what struck me, because it's so, it's actually kind of a soapbox issue for me in a way. But the way that these things are hardwired, these early patterns, and then they're driving our behaviors as a whatever 46-year-old adult, that they originated in survival physiology to survive. You know, I had someone say something really flippantly one time, like, oh, you're a people pleaser. And I think healthy aggression, the appropriate anger, like, that's such a dismissive way to address how I had to find safety by being pleasing.
Yes.
And that's survival based.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I want to honor kind of these survival mechanisms that, you know, our systems chose the best way to survive at a young age.
Yes, I love that. I wrote a post about that earlier. I haven't put it out yet on Instagram, but that is exactly kind of where my mind was. Definitely. Yeah, it was about what you're talking about the fawning.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in an environment and that is dangerous to your system, if you have a need, or if you show up in a way and there's no space for you, or it's dangerous to say you have a need, it's not that you decide I'm going to be quiet.
Exactly.
Your body decides for you. There's a beautiful
exactly.
mechanism. Yeah. But what we find happens is then later on, we find that, oh boy, then we're still that way. And sometimes we think it's our personality. I know some people believe that it does become your personality. I don't believe, personally, don't believe that. But again, it's hardwired in. So, you know,
Right.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm fawning. You go ahead.
I'm fawning. I'm busy fawning. I was thinking about how that's probably one of the really foundational concepts of healing is kind of identifying what is me, self, as Dick Schwartz might say, and what is my survival sort of hardwiring, like fawning.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. Exactly.
Which is a complex thing to even, and courageous for those of you out there trying to heal that.
I have a great visual, and it wasn't great when it happened to me, but it did happen. And I think that this will give a good example of how this becomes a biological response. So I grew up in an environment that felt to me very, very, very dangerous. And so the kids were really small at the time. We were somewhere on vacation, and I can't remember the details exactly, but all I know is somebody, I think in a store, I opened the door, or anyways, I said, you could say thank you. I said something like that. And then the person, it was a woman, she was taller than me. She turned around, came right up to my face and said, what did you say? And my body just froze in her face. When a second ago, I was like, well, you could say thank you. There was me being feisty. And then all of a sudden I became frozen.
Right.
So that was my body that learned really young. To rest, to not move when you're in a situation of high activation and intensity with another human that it was reminded of previous experiences. And so that's not my personality. That's my physiology that learned, you know, how to respond in these situations.
I really like that example. I could feel it as you were talking, just that fear and that freeze. And that's not a choice.
Yeah, not a choice.
It's your, you know, old brain, amygdala saying, hey.
So you have, and I know with my own clients, you have lots of people that come to you and they're like, okay, I don't want to be this way anymore. I want to heal. Yeah. I want to speak my truth and I want to say what I want to say. And gee whiz, I get it. I get it. Yeah, of course. So like you said, which I love the way you have to start to first kind of piece apart what is you and what is not you.
Right.
And then it takes time to start to feel comfortable.
You know, it really does. And as you say that, I'm reminded of, and there's consequences. For me, there's been consequences when some, you know, set a boundary, like it's just so easy, right? Set a boundary. And so I'm thinking, okay, yeah, I'll set a boundary. And then for the next day or 2 days, my body, maybe not my brain, not my prefrontal cortex, but my body is freaking out like, oh my gosh, something bad's going to happen. And yeah, that's so important to speak of in relation to the healing process, because just to honor the whole thing, to honor the boldness and the courage to try something different, to set a boundary, and that it's okay that it has consequences, but they suck. They can feel really bad.
And I love that you're saying, like, really honoring the process. And like when you can slow it down a bit, you see that it is your body that is doing this beautiful thing that it learned. And then there's a little space when you see that to create some compassion for it and appreciation and all of that.
This episode is sponsored by The Regulated Classroom. The Regulated Classroom equips educators with 4 core practices and sensory tools to cultivate conditions for felt safety in the classroom. Establishing felt safety is the single most effective antidote to the impacts of stress and trauma. 90% of educators trained in the regulated classroom say they feel more regulated and connected to their students when they use the practices and tools of the regulated classroom. For more information, go to www.regulatedclassroom.com.
So when we talk about healing, I don't want to make this like, oh, it's so unrealistic. You're not, you know, you've had trauma. And I want to say that maybe healing might look different than okay, you're not going to have symptoms anymore. It's like you have a brand new nervous system and it's going to happen quickly. And so I thought, and I don't know if you want to share, but I thought I could just share some of the real changes that have happened in my own life. I've been on this journey a long time, and I don't say I'm healed. I say I'm healing because it's a journey and it's ongoing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I can remember my mornings used to be really hard. I would wake up with chronic anxiety. It was so huge. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'd even wake up, I think I mentioned this on a previous episode, but I'd wake up actually crying and going to a chair and then my day was just filled with chronic anxiety. Like I had so much charge from living in charge my entire life as from, you know, being a baby up until, I guess, a teenager or a young adult, that this was how it was. There was never any release of it or acknowledgement of sort of, this was just what it was. My on button was always on. It never came down. But that feeling of that chronic anxiety, and then on top of it, you add the, why am I like this? I shouldn't be like this. Look at everybody else. What's wrong with me? You know?
So
that part that remembered what mornings used to be like growing up, that's what I was feeling. And that, with time and healing, is gone. I do not have that. And to me, that's a little bit of a miracle, because I never thought there would be a time where I would actually feel safe in my body and not experience the chronic anxiety. So I think that's something to really listen to and hang on to, that yes, even with developmental trauma, our patterns and those, the way we feel in our body can change. That's one area I've seen it.
I really love that story, because I think a lot of the people I work with, that's their story, a version of that anyway.
Naturally.
And it can feel like, yeah, I'm never going to feel safe in my body. I'm never going to not have anxiety. I started to have panic attacks when I was 21. And they came out of nowhere and with pretty strong force. And I felt like I was a different person overnight. It was a lot. I think in regards to healing, if a panic attack starts to come up, I know what to do now. And I remember people saying that, you know, however many years ago. And I just remember thinking, that's not for me. Like, I either have them or I don't. There is none of this in between. I can handle it if it comes up. And lo and behold, now that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, I'll notice the sensations, and I'll notice my maybe the dissociative experience, and I know how to bring it down. In most cases, once in a while, there's certain circumstances where it gets harder to do, but I think that speaks to the complexity of developmental trauma, and then with other traumas on top of the developmental trauma, because sometimes I can, and then sometimes if it's like a relational dynamic or something that ties directly to that trauma from childhood, it's still gaining, but I have less capacity.
Mm-hmm. Which makes so much sense. Yeah.
Right.
Definitely.
That chronic daily is just so mean.
Oh, well, that was just the way it was. And a few things come to mind. I remember one therapist, because I've been to a ton, and this was before they had the word trauma, complex trauma. So I would say I have anxiety. And I remember pointing to my stomach and saying, when is this going to go away? And I was referring to that feeling that I know a lot of people feel, that it just was with me all the time, except, I always say this, except when I was sleeping or eating ice cream. So then it was gone, at least while I was eating ice cream. So and so that, my experience with learning safety and learning to be in my body and the healing work I've done, is that I do not have that anymore, which I never thought that would happen. And I don't mean in the morning, all day long. The majority of my day is it's not like perfectly perfect, but I feel I used to dissociate a lot, because being present was, I learned a pattern it wasn't safe to be here, because you know, you're expanded, you're here. So I was always, and with learning regulation, and I really learned how to be here more. So I don't have that anymore. Do I still get anxious? Of course. That doesn't go away. No. And so if anybody told you, take my course and you won't have anxiety anymore, just think twice. Because anxiety is, God gave us that. I mean, it's part of who we are. It's
right.
You know, it's to prepare us for something. You know, when there's something that can happen, our issue is that it was there all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no threat, and yet I'm feeling like I need to run.
Exactly. Not a pleasant experience to live. And that's why I just love the body-based stuff.
I agree. I found it to be really, like, I've used, like you, I've had, you know, various therapists, and I've done various types of healing and tried different modalities. And I can't think of one that I didn't like, but I could say that there's one that, or there's some that I liked more than others. And with the somatic experiencing in particular, I've really man I've not managed. I've been really pleased with the way I can use the techniques to settle myself, and it works. I was thinking while you were talking, as a matter of fact, I was thinking about how that progress you've made, to not have chronic daily, every morning anxiety. Because when we're in that space, I find it really hard to like look out at my pine tree and really take in, like, oh, I love that pine tree. But I know because I've that on button has kind of been less, it's on less, I could say that. And so then I can find those moments more easily of looking outside and looking at the morning sun and how it's so pretty, and I can feel joy about that. And I think that's a tricky thing about healing, because I think that's an integral part of it, being able to just like enjoy the way the light shines on a tree in the morning. But when we're in that chronic anxiety, you might as well say fly to the moon with your arms. It feels so intense.
I'm laughing and crying at the same time. No, I'm not crying. I know what you mean exactly. Yeah, the feeling. I had a therapist once say, "Do something with me," and she wanted me to remember a time where I felt safe, and I couldn't. I just literally couldn't because I know I didn't. Does ice cream count? No.
I think I and you're I think I this is not the first time that I've heard ice cream connected with safety when people have developmental trauma. It's
Really?
like these kids find, we're so brilliant, right? We're so brilliant trying to find anything to feel slightly better.
Yes.
And you found ice cream, and it was like in that moment I feel slightly better.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. And so, I think that as we do get back in touch with our body, where we are able to see the sunshine outside, and then not just see it, but feel it, that we start to come back inside our bodies a little bit. That's it, right? That is definitely the part of healing that I feel brought back my humanity, meaning I've said this before, I always felt like a head, no legs, no legs, no body. And so healing is like, oh, there's a body too. And feeling safe in that body, even for a moment, is amazing.
Dr. Abby Blakeslee, she's one of the trainers for faculty members for somatic experiencing. She's the one that really helped me understand that that's how we get to better is those moments when, oh, I can feel my legs, or I'm having this stressed response and my legs are present, or I'm in my legs. And those are the moments, because eventually our bodies do that without us having to make them do that or nudge them. And that was so hopeful to hear and be reminded of. So hearing you say that makes me just like, that's right. That's why we do this.
And that's what I love too about somatic experiencing, because I think with trauma, the charge is so overwhelming, and it was so overwhelming. And so if we feel some anxiety in the present, we feel like I am anxiety, all of me. And I love that practice of recognizing, okay, but where else in our bodies do we feel, is there another place in our body that feels maybe not that, not a charge, or feels a little settled? And like you mentioned, your legs or your feet. So you start to see, okay, well, if my feet are feeling, they're not feeling any charge, they're feeling safe. Well, then it's not, I'm not, it's not all of me as anxious. And you start to see, okay, so then I have anxiety in my chest. I am not my chest.
Nope.
It's part of me.
It's such a big deal. And I am going back on my notes that we looking at what we talked about earlier in regards to the urgency piece, because that urgency, even if it's about healing, it's still anxiety based.
Yes, it is.
Right. And so when we can kind of go, I just am recovering from COVID, gosh. And I noticed that there were so many moments in that healing process where I used the stuff from somatic experiencing specifically, probably all my healing, but because I would have this urgency, and that's just anxiety of, oh my gosh, get better. I'm so sick of this and this, I can't take this anymore. And then what do? Well, okay, my elbow joint actually doesn't feel terrible. My kneecap feels pretty neutral. Does anywhere feel pleasant? Well, I don't have a sore throat anymore. And it helps get, instead of just that urgent, anxious brain determined to heal, it helps create more space and capacity.
Yes, I love that so much. Yeah, I just love it.
It is. It's, again, the word hopeful, because I think it's actually a really young thing to be so black and white. To be so, I think it's like I can't remember which developmental phase, but it's really appropriate for kids at a certain age to be really black and white. And then when we don't grow out of it, it's like, I'm either healthy or I have COVID. And like, maybe there's in between.
It's true. And it's the in between that we want to get comfortable with.
Yeah. So, yeah, because that's going to be life.
That is life. Yeah, great. Life is great. It's, and that's so good.
Yeah. I was thinking in preparation for our podcast, I was thinking, or our conversation, I was thinking about that. I was thinking about the, like some of, like healing from the developmental trauma. But then I lost my mom 5 years ago unexpectedly, and healing from that, and all of these experiences. And I got curious, like, have I healed? Where have I healed? Where have I not healed? It really brought up some interesting considerations in my mind.
I don't know if you had, like, if your complex trauma was related to her, but if not, or you can answer whichever way you want, but that's such a good point that I was wondering about, which was grief. And then we were talking about, like, not being black and white. And I wonder if people think that, well, in reality, I was talking to a friend yesterday, one of my good friends whose brother recently passed away. And she asked, like, is this ever going to go away, that feeling? And what was coming to my mind, not being an expert in grief, but that I don't think it goes away, but I think you learn to live with both. Like, there can be some joy and some sadness existing together. I don't know. What would you say about that with your mom?
I would agree 100%. I would say I actually it probably is a worthwhile description of healing, because I remember, because I was a therapist when my mom died, I felt like I had way more tools than if she had died, you know, a certain amount, or previously, before becoming a therapist. So I felt like, okay, I'm going to grieve her. I'm really going to allow myself to grieve. And here's the complex part. What I didn't know was I would be grieving not just her. I would be grieving, this is actually really fascinating, I think. I would be grieving being a mom without my mom. It was so fun being a mom with my mom alive. And I didn't know that that would change. I didn't know that she was such a, like a stool with three legs in my marriage. She was the third leg. I didn't know this. And so these were things that caught me off guard, and in my healing process ended up looking really messy in a lot of ways. And so that was a piece that as I was thinking, oh, I'm doing a good job healing, you know, and grieving my mom, and I'm present for it, and I'm feeling it all. I was, and there was this complexity to it that I had no idea about. And I feel like that's a decent description of healing from anything, especially developmental trauma.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a couple weeks back, I think, a couple weeks back, I had Dick Schwartz from IFS
on
the
I love
episode.
him.
And, you know, I really thought that my inner child or my young parts, I thought I was doing a really good job meeting her needs, taking care of her, and that she didn't really have much to say left. And then we do this episode where I see like she still has feelings that are very tender. And so that's another thing about the complexity. It's like you may still have parts of you that show up, and that's okay. That doesn't mean that you've gone backwards or that that you're still not healing.
Right.
But that's part of it, because it is so complex and so tender, because there's so many pieces to complex trauma.
I appreciate you sharing that. And I appreciate that you were willing to be vulnerable on your podcast, because it's such a tricky thing. Like, as a therapist, thinking there's a certain amount that we don't disclose, right? Like, disclosure, you're very careful and you choose wisely what you do and do not disclose. And it's part of our ethics. And yet there's this humanity piece of all of us that I'm thinking of something that's extra annoying to me right now. It's like the celebrity showing up armored and perfect.
Yeah, right.
Thin and beautiful and no wrinkles. And that's just part of the crap of the lie. Because
that's
not what healing is. And I get it. Like, I also
I'm going back to that image, because now I have that image. And then we think we need to be like that celebrity. Yes. Oh, okay. So that's like, look at her.
That's what healed looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so there was this part of me that's like, I did this podcast so that people could understand what's happening in their experience, get a little understanding. And I felt like this is part of it too.
Yep.
So, yeah.
The true healers that I know or that I spend time with, they remind me of that, that it's all of it. It's all of it. It's not trying to show up as powerful and armored and perfect. That's part of the game. That's part of the deception.
Totally.
If you'd like to find out more about trauma recovery coaching with me, you can visit my website at thehealingtraumapodcast.com. There you'll find a variety of ways that we could work together.
There's something that we were talking about that I loved, because I felt you said to me in our conversation that for your clients, one of the biggest pieces, more so than techniques, and is the relationship, the safety in that relationship. And I was like, yes, you want to say anything about that?
Gosh, that could be, we could do 20 episodes on
that. I agree.
One of the things that I think is worth saying in this moment, though, is I know for me, for example, with my EMDR therapist, who I love so much, she thought I was interesting. She thought I was a good person, even when I didn't. And she was so professional and confident and strong. I trusted her so much that I thought, maybe I am some of these things that she sees in me. And that relationship, transformed what I thought I could do in my own life and who I am today.
I can't even put words around it, because I know that's it. It's just so true. What happens, I think, if I try to put words around it, is that we missed out on that. We didn't have that, you know, that eye to eye, I see you, I feel you, I honor you kind of thing. I believe in you, I love you, all that. And I said that, I hear you. And then having a space for that, where somebody sees you the way that you really are, you feel it inside. And then you, like you said, I'm repeating what you said, you start to think, well, maybe it's true. Right. And I totally understand that. And that is what happens in my space too with my clients. And it just brings me so much joy, because I know that that's a missing piece. And it's also a piece that can give back life.
Oh my gosh, it is so life-giving. Yeah. And it is so missing.
Yeah. And you were describing the safety that you can feel in those spaces, how magical, or whatever word you want to use. It's
I didn't even know. I'm thinking of when we were talking about the demo I participated in. In one of my trainings with Joshua Silve, who is such an amazing human and a somatic experiencing faculty member, it was so interesting having the experience of safety. It kind of snuck up on me. I just, because I was in the process of this demo and working through some of the things that I've been really wanting to work through. And suddenly I just was kind of, I was looking in his eyes, and I could just feel his presence and witnessing my experience. And that was all that mattered in the world in that moment. And that's transformative. And if we can, as therapists, healers, coaches, give that to our clients, because we're not there to fix them.
Nope.
Or even heal them. We're there to witness, support, offer some ideas. No. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's so beautiful. Yeah, I love that. And I can feel that inside when you say that. So, yeah, so that's a bit of healing. I hope that people find what we're talking about useful and helpful. Yeah. And understanding that things can change for them when they're given safe space.
Mm-hmm. Safe space. Mm-hmm. Witnessing. I think it's Elizabeth Kubler-Ross that said, grief has to be witnessed to be healed. Mm-hmm. And I use that for all the things, not just grief, even though there's so much grief attached to all of this trauma. Just what it's like to feel seen and witnessed. And
absolutely, especially because for many of us there was never any space to be witnessed or seen, so to just have it is something. So is there anything you want to say before we end this fun conversation?
Gosh, I'm really grateful actually for this safe space that you've created, and I'm really feeling it in this moment, just why we try to heal it all, because it can feel so lonely. Yes. And it can feel so hopeless and frustrating, and to have these conversations, really it reminds me, oh, that's right. We do this to inspire, to be inspired, and because there, I think things can get better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, they can. Yep. I love that. Thank you, Allie.
Thank you. This is so good that you're doing this. I'm so grateful for you.
Oh, I'm grateful for you.
I loved my conversation with Allie. And I think, as you can hear, Allie and I were really in a certain rhythm where we could really validate, we understood each other, it made sense. And I think this is so important because when we are healing, often we feel alone, that, you know, we're thinking to ourselves, is this the way it's supposed to feel? And am I really healing? And why do I sometimes feel like I'm taking a step back? And I hope that through our conversation, you felt some validation. Because, you know, even though we are all different and we're on different journeys and at different in different places, you can also see how we're very much the same. We have the same design. And that can be really, I don't know, encouraging or soothing or comforting. So that piece I'm really happy about. And then the other thing is just, I felt like I just wanted to wrap up about healing and how, because it is, there are so many facets, that it will take time, and that how you might find is that, well, I'll talk about myself, and that for me, one of the first pieces that I healed in was one of the first therapists I remember going to that showed empathy and received my experience with empathy, and I felt it in my body. And that was really a validating or disconfirming experience because I'd never received that. And having this space of being seen and having a compassionate witness was so, it was so amazing for my system, because then when I was able to see in somebody else's eyes how they saw me, I was able to then see that maybe I was worthy of compassion. So that piece of empathy with a compassionate witness is a part of healing, and it's so important. And it's not the only piece, because what we may see is, okay, I had that, but I still might have all these other symptoms, like the constant anxiety, or, you know, feeling the hypervigilance all the time and having a narrow window of tolerance, the numbing, not being able to be in our bodies, and all of those kinds of things, because that's another piece. That's another part, another facet of healing trauma. And that's why you hear a lot about safety and how we have to work on feeling safe in our bodies. And that too, because we have naturally, our bodies learned that being in our bodies was unsafe. It felt too overwhelming. Our bodies took us out of it, and that became a pattern. So part of healing is learning about how to come back into our bodies, how to find safety in our bodies, how to work and work with and accept and attend to our sensations and feelings. And then we learn how not to be engulfed by them, because we see that that's not all there is. And so that's a part of healing too. And to me, that's a really big part, especially when we just have this mechanism that's always towards the danger out there. Our tolerance and our window really widens, so that we're just not just focused on the threat, but we see the other things, the good things that are happening. Those are the things we want to see. Not our fault that we don't see them at first, but there's a building process where we're able to start to see them, most importantly, start to feel them. And that's a huge change too that happens over time. And I, you know, all of these things happen over time. And just like trauma was cumulative, so is healing. It's cumulative. We might work on this piece, and then we work on that piece, and then we work on beliefs and our voice and safety and all of those things. And they're all important, and they all take time. So our healing journey may not look exactly as what we think it looks. Mine, when I first started, was, okay, I'm going to do this particular therapy in this many sessions, and then I'm not going to have any more symptoms or anxiety, and I'm going to be all better. And that's just not realistic. And so I felt it was important to just name that, because we can heal, but it sometimes looks different and it takes longer, and we need to just have the grace and the compassion not to really stress and rush and push ourselves towards that, and to just be a little bit more realistic with ourselves. So I hope you found today's episode helpful. Another thing that I don't really mention on here is that if you like the podcast, please subscribe. And if you can, it'd be really helpful to write a review so that other people can find the podcast easier.